Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking about the trails of New Mexico and some of the new things going on in the trails that we can all walk on. Right now, I would like to welcome Angela and Lily Reese. They are sisters, and they are both part of the Duke City Derby League. We're talking today about roller derby. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank Hi. You. I'm so happy to be here.
Me too. I'm glad you're here. I don't know anything. I mean, I scoured the internet and looked at the pictures and stuff, but I've never been to a roller derby bout.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a bout?
It's called a bout.
What is roller derby?
Well, roller derby's actually been around for a really long time, and most people don't know that it's still around. And not only that, but it's getting more and more popular. Roller derby is basically a game played with 10 women on the track at a time on quad skates. So not roller blades, which is kind of like, oh, don't.
Definitely even, not.
Don't go there. We were quads.
Meaning four wheels.
Yes.
Eight wheels total.
Eight wheels.
Four on each feet.
Yeah,
on
right.
each foot.
Okay, right, right.
But yeah, exactly. So it's a little bit trickier. Roller blades are actually kind of easy. Quads are a little bit more challenging. And so, most of us, at least Lily and I's age, we're in our 30s. We used to skate in roller rinks when we were kids. And so getting back into it wasn't that hard. Roller derby is basically a game played on skates. The jammer, which if you Google it, go to Roller Derby Explained, it has an animated version of it that kind of spells it all out. But basically, there's a jammer on each team on the track, and the jammers are the players that score the points. They are the ball. So the jammers have a star on their helmet. They're kind of are the superstars of the game.
They are the ball.
They are the ball. They have to work their way through the pack, and after they get through the pack that first time, every player that they pass from the opposing team is a point after that first lap. So if we're trying to help our jammer through, as we're trying to help our jammer through, we're trying to stop the other jammer getting through.
So as a blocker, I'm offense and defense at the same time.
Uh-huh. So everybody has probably seen speed skating on the Winter Olympics where the speed skaters go around this track really fast and their arms go up and down really long. You're also going around a track. Is it like that same sort of size? I mean, what does the track look like?
You know, I would have to say that the track that we skate on is a little bit smaller, and I'm pretty sure that for the Olympics that they skate on a bank track, which is what roller derby used to be played.
Not the ice, but the roller skating park.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. The roller skating park, I'm pretty sure they're on a bank track. It's actually easier to get going faster if you have angles to work with you
right.
and gravity to work with you. We actually play on a flat track, which is a little bit trickier just because, you know, as you're coming around the turn, you kind of have to slow down a little bit just to, you know, stay inbound. So it's a little...
It's much easier to find tracks to skate on because a bank track requires a lot of building material, things like that. So flat track's nice because we can pretty much skate anywhere there's a flat surface, concrete,
basketball
wood.
Court, yeah. hockey rinks.
So it doesn't really matter whether it's a wooden track made for that or you just...
Nope.
So what do? Do you draw lines on it or set up cones? Or
yeah. We set up rope that we tape over, and that kind of defines the boundary of inbounds, out of bounds.
And in Santa Fe, we actually skate outdoors here off of Camino Carlos Rey. There's an outdoor hockey rink, and on the weekends, you'll see the guys in the rollerblades playing hockey there. But we also, you know, take it over every Thursday from 5 to 7. We're out there practicing, and we, you know, draw the chalk course and practice there, set up cones.
So it's a women's thing. How many women on each team?
Well, some leagues, there are about 300 leagues in the nation, and most leagues have at least four teams. So on each league, you'll have about four teams. Each team has a minimum of about 10 players, maximum of about 20. So our Santa Fe team, we have 11 players right now.
And so when a game starts, a basketball team might have any number of players, but only a certain number are on the court, or any sport, only a certain number on the field each time. How many people, when you're actually going into a competition, into a bout, are on each team?
Four blockers and then the jammer, who is the point scorer.
So five people.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the entire team?
The people who are actually
on the
in
court?
Action on the court at
five.
Any given moment. Five people.
Five from each.
Five from each team. And so when it starts, what happens? the gun goes off and
basically there's a whistle. Okay. And you'll see the jammer line. So there are two jammers in the back with stars on their helmets, and then there's a pack which exists of the four players from each team. That's the pack. The first whistle blows, the pack takes off, and then after the last person in the pack has passed a certain line, they blow the second whistle. It's actually two short whistles, and then the jammers take off. Pack's trying to kind of get positioned, starting to make holes for their jammer if their jammer's coming through first. If the other jammer's coming through, they're starting to build walls, trying to get ready to block. So that's basically how it starts.
Now, is there an advantage to being on the inside or the outside of the track?
There's strategy around every piece of the game. So it's actually, when you first see it, it seems like chaos. And then as you get better and kind of figure out what each of the team players are doing, you realize the strategy. There's a strategy to being on the inside line. There's a strategy to being in the front. There's a strategy between building a wall in the back. There's all kinds of strategies for every...
But yes, in general, holding, you know, the inside line is going to be the fastest way.
Now, when you start, does somebody get the inside or the outside? Are you alternating? Or?
Well, it's kind of... It is a full contact sport. We do have legal points of contact. So, say, for instance, I'm in the front on the inside line, and another blocker comes up on my outside, and they can hit me on the chest with their shoulder and knock me out of bounds, and then they've got my spot. So,
right. So when you're knocked out of bounds, that's you get what, a penalty?
I don't get a penalty as long as it was a legal contact, a legal hit. As long as I don't advance my position, I have to drop back behind them. Then it's a legal play. It's a legal move. So nobody gets penalized. Only if it's an illegal hit or if I advance my position, then are penalties doled out.
It sounds like, in a way, an excuse for a whole lot of contact.
Definitely.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I first started playing roller derby, I was looking for something to do. I was actually bored, and I'm like, I need to find something to do. I wasn't in a relationship. I was single, and I was like, I need to do something. And I found out that one of my friends was playing roller derby, and I put on skates, and I was just like, oh, that sounds like so much fun. And it really is the most challenging thing that I've ever done in my life. And it sounds like it would be really physical, but it is so challenging to have to keep in mind of who's coming in to hit you, where your jammer is, where the other jammer is, who you should be working with to build a wall or to try to make holes for your jammer. It is so challenging, and it is very physical. But the interesting thing about it is that we've got a girl on our team. She's 95 pounds. So it's not just for the big, you know, burly right. girls. They range in size. The tallest girl on Duke City Derby, the league, she's 6'3". And the shortest girl, I think, is 4'10 and 3/4". So,
and they're all good because they have different advantages.
Yeah,
different
exactly. abilities.
Now, do you wear protective gear?
Absolutely.
Helmet, wrist guards, elbow guards, knee pads, mouth guard. We're pretty protected.
Do people nevertheless get injured doing this?
Absolutely. Accidents happen. And we had a girl break two ribs because she slid into an open gate one time. People have broken fingers. We had somebody, you know, go to the emergency room she had some issues with her neck. So, yeah, stuff absolutely does happen, and it's not, you know, that's why you sign waivers. So we're not held responsible for anything. But you do, you know, really with any kind of sport, snowboarding, mountain biking, walking down the street, driving your car, I mean, it's dangerous. And if you were afraid to get hurt, you wouldn't do anything, I think, you know. So.
Well, you might do a whole lot of things, but still not roller derby.
Well, you know, I just think that it's, there are 30 pages of rules for roller derby now. So we, you know, legal points of contact are, you know, we have referees that are volunteers that come and spend their time and actually, you know, watch and make sure that, you know, if you do hit somebody in the head that you're penalized for it.
Right.
And if you do it over and over again, that you're kicked out of the game. So
when I first started playing, fighting was part of an accepted kind of part of derby, and now it's definitely not that way. You can get ejected from the game for starting fighting, so it's got a different feel. But I dislocated my shoulder when I first started playing derby, which is why I took a year hiatus.
Right.
But I'm feeling strong again, so.
And so you.
It's hard for me to sit on the sidelines and just watch.
So you, I mean, you both really love it.
It's amazing.
It's addictive. And I started playing, I'm heading into my fourth year, and I just started playing on home teams. And in the past year, I actually started traveling with a travel team called the Muñecas Muertas. And
the dead dolls.
Exactly. So we're actually ranked 13th in the nation right now, which out of 300 leagues, to be ranked 13th in the nation is amazing. And we've had to fight for it so hard. And we, you know, if you look at some of the other leagues across the country, they have coaches, they have these beautiful indoor practice spaces with nice wood floors. And for Albuquerque, for the Duke City League, we actually skate outdoors on concrete, which when you slide on concrete, you damage your gear, and, I mean, people get road rash, and, you know, we're kind of like the ghetto derby. We really had to fight for it. So, I mean, just going from, you know, if you want it to be a fun kind of afternoon thing, the home teams are fun, but if you want to come into it with everything you got and you're really competitive, then the travel team is so much fun. We've been to Minneapolis, and we've been to Portland and Denver, Dallas, Seattle.
We're talking to Angela and Lily Reese of the Duke City Derby League, and the team here in Santa Fe is the Santa Fe Disco Brawlers.
Yeah.
And Lily is actually sitting here with a mirror disco ball necklace. Is that part of your regalia? No, that would destroy you if you got hit.
Exactly. I can't skate in this, but I can definitely use it as part of my pre and post persona.
Now, that's another thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, because it seems like part of this is just the aesthetic of it. Did I hear mention of fishnet stockings?
Absolutely.
For sure. I've worn white, black, pretty much any color. Bright green. It's exciting to be feminine and strong, to look good and yet still kick some butt.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because there is a subtle but definite shift that some of the teams are taking. Like right now, we have our fun names on Killer Queen, and Lily is Tiger Lily, and we have the outfits, you know. We had a team from San Diego come and play us, and these girls were in, like, little black panties and fishnet stockings, and it was, you know, risque, but they looked great, you know, don't get me wrong. But, like, there's a team in Denver, and they're actually shifting from the more risque outfits to looking like a team. Everybody has the same uniform, and instead of using their, you know, their fun names, they're actually using their last names, more like a basketball team would.
Right.
So there is a shift to, you know, wanting to be taken more seriously. But, you know, some of us joined it because it is fun and because it is quirky, and, you know, most of the girls have tattoos or, you know, colored hair or, you know, tend to be a little bit more on the fringe, you know, and that's part of the beauty of it.
So this is an amateur league. Is there professional roller derby at this point in history?
You know, we do have sponsors, but as far as I know, there aren't any teams out there or any leagues out there that are supporting their players solely by playing roller derby.
What about bank track? I thought there was some teams.
As far as I know, there isn't. Yeah. And just to point out, too, there are men's roller derby teams, especially on the East Coast, I know of.
But isn't it more traditionally, I mean, with the 80-year history, I guess, of this sport, isn't it more of a women's thing?
You know, they used to have co-ed teams. And I don't
really
know how they did that, but men's, women's, and co-ed teams. So I think that, you know, and for as long as it's been around, it's seen all incarnations, really. So
let's get back to the playing. You're a blocker, Lily.
Yeah.
What are you?
I do both. I block and I jam.
You block and you jam. Uh-huh. So let's say you're jamming.
Uh-huh.
So the first whistle goes off and the two groups of four blockers. Then the two little whistles go off and the jammers go for it. Uh-huh. What do you do? Like, you're watching the track. What's your strategy?
Well, for me as a jammer, I'm not the fastest jammer out there, but I can hold my own. So really, Lily's a snowboarder, and she used to tell me when she first was teaching me how to snowboard, she said, don't look at the trees, look at the holes between the trees. So really, when I'm jamming, that's what I look for. I look for the holes in the pack. So I try to go as fast as I can and really just keep my feet moving, because if you're slow and you come up to the pack slow, the pack's going to, you know, they're going to destroy you. It just gives them, you make a better target if you're going slow. So I try to go as fast as I can, and Lily as a blocker would really just try to make some good holes for me and, you know, block the other team's blockers from hitting me or getting even in front of me. So
ways I can help her out is by giving her whips, which means I reach my arm back, look for her to come up, she'll grab onto my arm, and I'll whip her forward. forward.
Right.
Or I can see somebody that looks like it's going to get in her way, and I'll come in and I'll hit them and get them out of the way so she's got a clear space in which to get through.
Now, the blockers are in front of the jammers, at least when you start out. So were you looking back over your shoulder the whole time?
Constantly. That's the main key. If you can look behind you, then you're aware of when their jammer's coming through, when your jammer's coming through, where movement is. I'm a pivot. That means I tend to be in the very front and kind of control the speed of the pack. And that means I have to constantly look behind me, where my players are, where their players are, you know, how fast the jammers are coming up to the pack so that I can open up holes.
And what I've told my newbies, we've got new girls that are skating with us, is that if you're looking in front of you, then the action's in the wrong place. I mean, really, the action should be behind you.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
So when people come into roller derby, I mean, you decided at the age of 30-something that you were going to do roller derby because you were bored and single. Okay.
Exactly.
Were you already a skater? What sports had you already done?
Oh, gosh. I was a cheerleader through junior high and high school, and that's about it. I was not – this is the most physical or probably the best shape I've ever been in my life, which – you know, I'm not saying much, but, you know, I can actually, you know, my lungs are strong, my legs are strong, my posture is better. I mean, just health-wise, I mean, I work for a catering company, and I want to tell my boss when I take time off, I'm like, this is probably, like, the best health insurance plan that you could have had me on is because my, you know, I quit smoking, I really am in the best shape of my life. And
but what'd you do? Did you buy a pair of four-wheel, eight-wheel, whatever, quad roller skates and just start skating down the sidewalk until you were ready to?
No, the Duke City Derby League and Santa Fe, the Disco Brawlers, we actually take very good care of people that are interested in playing roller derby. We start you off with the very basics. We have extra skates that we loan out. We have extra pads. And we basically take your hand and we'll lead you through not only learning how to skate. I mean, and really from not knowing how to skate to being able to play a game takes 6 months to a year.
That's not very much.
It's not. It's not. And for some people, it's a little bit less. So, and to be really competitive, it takes, you know, probably 2 to 3 years. So we basically teach the new people that are interested, and, you know, if you're out there, please, you know, let us know.
We will give numbers at the end.
Yes, exactly. So we basically will take you by the hand, and we'll teach you how to skate, how to take a hit, how to fall, how to block. If you're interested in jamming, we'll teach you how to get faster. We teach you everything you need to know. So that's basically what happened to me is somebody loaned me a pair of skates for, you know, a couple of weeks. I skated on these loaner skates, fell in love with it the first time, really. I mean, I really did get beat up, but I just thought it was so much fun. And, you know, if you're afraid of pain, this may not be the best thing for you. But if you like to, you know, be competitive and if you like to be challenged, and, I mean, it's almost such a social sport, too. I liken it to rugby because, I mean, we definitely go out after the games and, you know, we definitely are family, especially the Santa Fe team because we travel so much together because we carpool down to Albuquerque for practices down there too.
So it really is a community of roller derby girls.
Absolutely. And we, like this weekend, or actually 3 weekends ago, we had a team from Seattle called Rat City. They came and played us. And, you know, we have a welcoming barbecue on the Friday before a game. And then the Saturday night after our game, we have a big, you know, after party dinner and drinks out, dancing with them. And, I mean, it's not just a community here in New Mexico. It's a nationwide community. Anytime I go and travel, I look up a roller derby team or league and skate with them. And it's been so fun and such a women-friendly, women-power, you know, sport, and I just love it.
You called yourselves and the others girls. I got an email from somebody a while back who said, you called somebody girl, and it's a woman. I was like, yeah, you're right, but, you know, girls, you guys are, just, you know, women to the max.
We are women to the max, and actually in the Santa Fe team, the oldest lady that we have, I think, is 44, 45. But Albuquerque, I mean, they've got, you know, 18-year-olds. I mean, Santa Fe, we tend to be an older team, a gayer team for that matter. But Albuquerque has really, you know, they're young girls. So, but I don't know, girls, women, I don't really have any
straight,
stigma,
gay, bi, a little bit everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit of all different shapes, sizes, ages, colors.
Sexual preferences.
Yeah. And that's what I love so much about it. It's so diverse. It really encompasses women of all walks of life.
It's very welcoming, for sure.
So you've got a game coming up this Saturday, the 6th of June.
Yes, we're actually playing Dallas. And as far as I know, they aren't ranked nationally, but we played them last year, and I think we only won by 1 point. So it could be a very good game. And it's all of our games are played on Saturdays, and they're doubleheaders. So we always have two games in a row. This one is us against Dallas, and then the second game is the Santa Fe Disco Brawlers against DIA. So that should actually be another
DIA.
Derby Intelligence Agency.
Yeah. That's an Albuquerque team.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
And so this is the Disco Brawlers. We've played one game so far this season. We played the Hobots. And we
The Hobots. I love the names of the teams.
You know, there have been a lot of thought and energy put into the names.
And the other Albuquerque team is the Doomsdames. So there's Doomsdames, DIA, and the Hobots, and then us up here in Santa Fe, the Disco Brawlers.
So if people want to go, where do they go?
It's at the Santa Ana Star Center, which is where the Scorpions play. It's not the Santa Ana Star Casino. It's the Star Center, which is a little bit further out of, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes from the highway. But they can look at our website, DukeCityDerby.com, or the Santa Ana Star Center does have a website, too, with a great map. But it's not a casino. It is an actual large 7,000 seat capacity indoor arena that's made for professional sports. And
it's amazing.
They were excited to have us, and we're excited to be there. And it's a polished concrete floor. But it is, and we have the Jumbotron. I mean, it's real.
We've been getting about 800 spectators showing up to the different games, so it's kind of put us into this whole another league. It's really exciting.
DukeCityDerby.com is where people can get more information. So what's the normal score? First of all, how long does the game last?
There are two 30-minute halves, and in between the two halves, there's about a 15-minute break. The two 30-minute halves are broken down into two-minute jams. A jam lasts a maximum of 2 minutes. The lead jammer, which we didn't talk about, the two jammers, as they take off from the line, if one jammer makes it through the pack legally and inbounds first, they're called the lead jammer. The lead jammer can call off the jam at any time by touching their hands to their hips over and over again, kind of like, I don't know how you say that.
Yeah.
But they can call off the jam at any time. So a jam can last 30 seconds, but it lasts a maximum of 2 minutes.
Why do they get that power to call off the jam?
Well,
strategy.
Yeah.
Ah. Basically, if their jammer gets in front and starts to score points beforehand, you can call it off before they get to the pack and start scoring.
Interesting.
Or if you have people in the penalty box and you want to give yourselves a little bit more time, that's another reason.
So there's a total hour of play. What kind of scores are we looking at? Do they look more like basketball or hockey scores?
Basketball. In the hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean, usually a high-scoring game would be, you know, 150 for each team. Usually in the 70s, you know, it kind of depends on how good the teams are and how matched they are, that sort of thing. If both have really good defense, then the scores could be as low as 20 or 30.
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen anything that low. Usually they're in, like, the 70s.
Well, the last game against DIA versus
Doomsdames
was 30 to 150. So
good heavens.
That was a little painful.
Then you go home sad.
It was very sad.
Or really happy.
Exactly. Well, and the funny thing is, too, is just to point out some of the Disco Brawlers, and because we're such a small league and we're still looking for people, trying to recruit people to come and skate with us, a lot of us play on the travel team and we play on a home team. So we'll be playing both games.
So the travel team, the home team is the Santa Fe Disco Brawlers.
Yes.
And what's the travel team called?
The Muñecas Muertas.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, Angela Reese and Lily Reese from the Duke City Derby League, the website once again.
DukeCityDerby.com.
And if people are interested in getting involved or just simply going or finding out more about it, you can go there. Mm-hmm. It's just great having you on and learning about this whole new world.
You got to come and check it out, Mary Charlotte.
Definitely.
So fun.
Well, we'll see you this Saturday at the Santa Ana Center.
Great.
Is that what it's called?
Santa Ana Star Center.
Santa Ana Star Center.
It's a mouthful.
Thank you both so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Reese Peterson and Becky Fulgham. They're with the Santa Fe Conservation Trust and are here to talk about, among other things, National Trails Day, which is this Saturday, June 6th. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Hi, Mary and Charlotte. We're really glad to be here with you today.
It's great to have you again, Reese, and to meet you, Becky. So, National Trails Day. Is this something new? I'd never heard of it.
National Trails Day has been around for a couple of decades, actually.
Ah, yes.
It was started as part of a, I don't have the material in front of me, but a congressional sort of decision that trails were so important to communities and healthy for communities. They actually had a report that said that ideally, every American ought to be able to have a trail within 15 minutes distance of their front doors, a trail that would be able to allow them to walk in and through their community and return in a loop without having to double back. That would be good for the health of the people, the health of the population, the health of the economy.
Now, we're not talking Manhattan.
Well, that can even happen in Manhattan, I think, but that's not our particular focus here, of course, because we're the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. We work in and around Santa Fe County in northern New Mexico to help our communities stay connected with the land forever.
So when we talk about trail, are you talking about hiking trails, biking, dog, walking? What do we mean?
Santa Fe Conservation Trust focuses on all forms of non-motorized trails. We really feel that it's important that people be able to walk, hike, run on trails, that they are able to walk their dogs. A lot of our trails in Santa Fe, in and around Santa Fe, are dog friendly. Some are leash only and some are not.
And even the leash only ones are only barely followed in
that
regard.
Right. Under voice command is the technical term, but of course the definition of that varies. Mountain biking, of course, is a growing recreation pastime in our community, and we have a lot of great trails for mountain bikes as well, and equestrian trails as well.
Santa Fe is a really lucky city in that it's so accessible by trail in so many different areas, and there are so many places that even if you have really small children or babies in strollers or backpacks, you can still get out on the trail. It's not as rugged necessarily as an advanced trail, but you have those too. So you have access for local people, you have access for families, you have access to your neighbors in ways that you might not, since we don't have traditional neighborhoods where you can stand outside and necessarily talk over your back fence to your neighbors, but you'll run into them on the trails on your way to and from our other community centers. And it gives us an advantage in community building in a way that you don't get in most bigger cities, and certainly not in state capitals anywhere else.
Yep. What happens on National Trails Day?
Well, we are at the Santa Fe Conservation Trust hosting a National Trails Day event focused here at the Santa Fe Rail Yard Park. We're going to be at the north end of the Santa Fe Rail Yard Park 2 days from now, Saturday, June 6th, from 9:30 in the morning to noon. We'll be right next to Site Santa Fe, across Paseo from the Farmers Market Building.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a couple of booths there. And all of our volunteers will be there from our team, our trails team. We are working in partnership with the county and the city of Santa Fe and the Santa Fe Conservation Trust together to create the Trails of Santa Fe Stewardship Alliance. We are work with volunteers, train volunteers in state-of-the-art trail maintenance and trail building skills for free. Great training that is offered, particularly through help with the county and the state, actually. And those trails volunteers go out and help to improve and repair problems, especially this year on the Dale Ball Trails. We're really focused on the Dale Ball Trails. That's Santa Fe's premier trail system. People love the Dale Ball Trails. And every time you go out on there, you run into somebody you know or see something new. Anyway, the Trails Day celebration will have all of our volunteers from the trails repair teams. We'll also have raffles. People can sign up for free raffles to win all sorts of great trails-related equipment, like trails maps, maybe a backpack. We are probably going to have a GPS unit to give away.
Excellent.
Courtesy of some local shops. We're trying to feature local merchants. We'll have some discount coupons available for merchandise to the Sangre Cristo Mountain Works, a generous sponsor.
So this is all this coming Saturday,
yeah.
And then the main thing is getting out on the trails.
That's right. And at that National Trails Day event this Saturday, people will also be able to vote on their favorite trails using a big map that we'll have there. And they'll be able to sign up for trails-related events, and even if they're interested, to learn more about our Trails Volunteer Team, because
well,
we are
talk
a fun
about
group
that.
Of people.
Yeah, what is the Trails Volunteer Team?
Our Trails Volunteer Team is run by Susan Spinell, who is our Trails Coordinator at the Trust. The team is co-sponsored by the Trust, the county, and the city. We've got over 100 volunteers, Mary Charlotte, and we only started the program last summer. People are flocking to this program.
And what do you do?
We train the people in how to build and repair trails, because we have lots of great trails, but they're not always in good repair. It's really hard for local governments to find enough funding to keep trails in great repair. So we're just here to help. And we love having the county and the city as our partner. The volunteers go out and they actually fix problems that are identified along the Dale Ball Trail. They make it easier for mountain bikes to use without the mountain bikes tearing up the trail. And it makes it a better experience for both mountain bikers and hikers on the Dale Ball Trail.
How do mountain bikers and hikers interact with each other? Is that a working thing? Is there a conflict?
By and large, in our organization, there hasn't been a conflict. We have mountain bike volunteers. We have hiking volunteers. We have equestrian volunteers. We have just about every trail demographic represented that you can imagine. And we're all out there for the same thing. We're all out there to make sure that we can all have access to these trails, all have access to these remarkable resources that we have available here. And no, there hasn't been any kind of a conflict.
I've been out twice on the Dale Ball Trails in the last couple of days. After work, I try to go out and walk it off a little bit. And I have been really noticing how polite the mountain bikers are that I run into on that trail. The first one who comes along, they usually travel in packs. The first one that I'll encounter on the trail will slow down or stop to let me know that there are two other people behind her,
right?
For example, and that lets people in my group know, whether we should stand on the side of the trail, etc. People have been really polite. I think there's a growing awareness of sharing the trails in our community.
Let's talk about the relationship between land conservation and trails. Do trails have any negative impact, and what is the positive impact?
The trails is in our mission. Trails have always been in the mission of the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. We're a land conservation organization, but we feel very strongly that people stay connected to the land by using trails. It's the way that we get out in nature. It's the way that we appreciate nature. The more we get out on the trails, the more that we experience the beauty of our open spaces and the wildlife that lives in them, the more people are interested in making sure that open space is almost institutionalized in our community. We feel that there's a direct link.
Well, and there again, you have people like me who have young families who live in town or close to town, who work full-time, who have very busy schedules, and they don't have the chance to maybe even just drive the 40 minutes to a national forest and get out that way, but they have access to open spaces. They can walk out their door and in Santa Fe be 15 minutes from any number of trailheads, and they can get out and get into a deeper connection with the land under their feet, the people around them, and the history of the place that they live.
Yeah, I was in the parking lot of the Atalaya Trail recently, and I was just headed up the trail, and there were a couple of young ladies coming down the trail after hiking, and one of them was saying to the other, "I am so glad that this trail system is here. It really keeps me sane, because this is where I come
and
discharge."
And you wrote that down.
I did write it down. As a matter of fact, I put it in our spring newsletter. I put that quote in there saying that it keeps me sane. The other one remarked, yeah, I love the fact that there's always a trailhead within a few minutes of anywhere I am in this city. I can always get to a trail when I need
know.
It.
It really is amazing. Yeah. I mean, when I first moved here from a huge city on the East Coast, I thought it is really quite amazing that there are dirt roads and trail systems within city limits.
Yeah,
of a state capital.
And you yourself, you're a big fan of the dog park. I know that you love to walk the trails in the dog park.
Definitely. My dogs love it even more.
Yeah, definitely. But what have you noticed about the sense of community you get when
you
experience
it? It is funny because the dog people tend to know each other's dogs.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, there's, you know, Rover and his mother, whatever her name is, and the dogs are really, by and large, this amazing group of well-behaved middle-class dogs that socialize and say, oh, hello, how are you? Talk for a moment and then move on. It's so civilized that it's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I find that when all the dogs are off-leash, they all behave. You know?
Yeah, if there's one dog that's on leash, that is a problem because the off-leash dogs tend to get a little bit testy and aggressive with them. So, I mean, that's the thing. If you go to the dog park, you really shouldn't. I mean, why would you go to the dog park if you're going to keep your dog on the leash? Because it's an off-leash park.
It's one of the things I love about the dog park is that you can let your animal off-leash, and it's totally cool.
But what's nice also about that is that you can go to that place 100 times and never walk exactly the same route twice because there are so many, and I'm not real good with having a map in my head, so I never even know where I am. I just eventually get back to the car and it's different each time.
Definitely. And that's what I love about the Dale Ball Trail system as well. It's such a great network. You can make a tiny loop choice. You can stay out all day. You can park your car at one end of the city and end up at the other end and do a car shuttle with a friend. It's a great system. You know that system was named for the founding director of the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, Dale
Ball. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us more about the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. You do trails, and this weekend is Trails Day, and we'll give all that information and website and so on at the end of the program. But what does the larger Santa Fe Conservation Trust do?
The trust has three program areas. We're all about land conservation and the conservation of the quality of life that comes along with natural intact lands. We're really about helping the communities of northern New Mexico protect a network of natural undeveloped land in and around our communities in perpetuity so that there always be beautiful open spaces, there will always be wildlife habitat, there will always be opportunities for recreation, and outdoor recreation. There will always be the beautiful backdrops to northern New Mexico's communities. It's something that we've got in spades here in New Mexico, is the glory of the land. It's not too late in New Mexico, as it is in so many other places in America, to save the lands that underpin our quality of life.
So how do you do that? Are you working with private land, public land?
We work primarily with private landowners. There are other organizations here in town and in New Mexico, government agencies, other nonprofits that work to help protect public lands. But we are actually here to help private landowners become conservation players. We work with landowners who want to ensure that their beautiful natural open lands never, ever become destroyed, even after they lose control of those lands through selling it to someone else, to letting their children inherit it. So they actually work with us to give us their development rights in perpetuity. They own the land, they keep the land, many times they still live on the land, but no one can ever put condos on the back 40 ever.
Right.
And so it provides the landowner a real measure of satisfaction, knowing that their legacy is going to be beautiful lands for New Mexico.
Not to mention tax breaks.
And they do get a tax break. They get a federal tax deduction, which a lot of New Mexicans can't really use because we don't have a lot of income here in the state. But thanks to a very progressive new state law that was passed, sponsored by then Representative Peter Wirth, now State Senator Peter Wirth, it's a new tax credit that allows landowners who donate conservation easements, that's the tool that they use to work with us to protect their land. When they donate an easement, they earn a tax credit from the state that they can either use to write off their state tax liability, or if they don't pay a lot of state taxes, like me, they can sell that tax credit to a more wealthy taxpayer and actually earn cash for helping. Yes.
I wonder if anybody knows that.
Well, we're helping to spread the word, and we're finding that more and more people are hearing about this and calling us up. In fact, we are working on, how many projects right now, Becky? Do we have about 8? land projects going on right now?
We have 8 active ongoing that are getting ready to go through the vetting process with us, and we probably get 3 to 5 calls a week of interested landowners, inquiring landowners.
Yeah, we are. I think we're working on about 1,300 acres and about 8 different projects right now. So far, we've protected 32,000 acres in and around Santa Fe County. So we're really pleased with that.
It adds up. Yeah, there are little pieces here and there.
And we're getting it before it's too late, and we're doing it with the help of all of our communities.
Interesting. So, now, you can't really control what people do, but are you looking at areas that are, for example, really important for watersheds or for certain kinds of conservation?
Definitely. We feel that some of the most endangered landscapes in northern New Mexico are the ones that are close to dense communities and are destined to be part of the next wave of development. Those include the very beautiful Galisteo Basin landscape just south of Santa Fe. It includes the entire Upper Pecos River watershed in and around the town of Pecos. Enormously beautiful trout-filled waters in the Pecos, very threatened from any number of human impacts that have to do with less than appropriate land uses in upstream from the river. And so we're trying to work with landowners to raise awareness of the issues so that they can become more land user friendly, and also to offer them opportunities to protect their open lands in perpetuity so that they know that they will always play a part in keeping the Pecos River beautiful.
Do you approach them or do they approach you?
It both. We actually have some outreach events. We try to go out into the communities, work with people who already know our work, have them host little sort of living room get-togethers or town hall meetings. We try to send our newsletters out to all and sundry. You don't have to pay us money to get on our newsletter mailing list. It's an outreach tool, and people can do that by going to our website, sfct.org, and get on the mailing list. We're also working in some places farther north from here as well, working in several other river basins.
All within Santa Fe County?
No, we work in Santa Fe County and all the counties that touch Santa Fe County. That's my shorthand for that. Easy way to remember.
So it's Santa Fe Conservation Trust Plus.
That's right. Santa Fe Plus. We started off just in Santa Fe County, but in the 15 years that we've been around, we have worked with over 70 landowners in 5 different counties all over the state, northern part of the state.
We're talking to Reese Peterson and Becky Fulton from the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, and this coming Saturday, June 6th, is National Trails Day. So on the trails, you've got people from all walks of life, all races, all ages, all creeds and colors. What is your vision for a trail system in this area? More trails? Better maintained trails? What are you looking for?
We're looking for both of those things. We have lots of great trail systems. We have the Dale Ball system. We have the Rail Trail. We have the La Tierra trails in the Northwest Quadrant. We've got a number of trails in the Caja del Rio area. We've got Forest Service trails.
Do you monitor to see how much they're being used?
We don't actually monitor for use, but we actually monitor to look for ongoing and developing erosion problems on the trail, and then direct our trail crews to volunteers to go out and work with us to fix them, which is really satisfying.
Does that correlate to how much they're being used?
Not necessarily. Sometimes it does correlate to their being overused or used so much, loved so much is the way I like to put it, that they need a little help. In some cases, it has to do with the fact that maybe when they were built, they weren't built to the very best standards. They were perhaps built to the best standards known at that time, but boy, the world's come a long way in understanding how a trail can be built so it's sustainable and doesn't need maintenance. So we're helping to bring those standards to our existing trail systems.
How do you build a trail that doesn't need maintenance?
Well, you build it by understanding the way water works and the way precipitation flows off of a hillside, how it gathers in low spots, creates mud. Then the people go through and they don't want to get their shoes muddy, so they'll go around it and create a side trail, which causes more erosion, and how to use rocks to solve water problems instead of create them. Sometimes when you try to dam up put a little diversion dam in an arroyo, it causes more problems. You think you're helping, but you're actually hurting. So that's one things we love about our state-of-the-art trails training, which we offer to all of our volunteers for free, is to once you go through our trails training, you will never look at a trail the same way. I am just astonished at how good the training is. And for that, we have the County of Santa Fe to thank for providing a really good contract trainer to us. She's actually somebody who works with the state park system and works on her days off. She'll work.
Cool.
Cynthia Lovely does that, and she does an excellent job. We also had a mountain bike association trainer come down from Colorado and train 12 of our top volunteers in being crew leaders. It was an intense training in how to manage volunteers and how to build trails to the right standard. It's really fun. So I really
When do you do these trainings?
We do those trainings all summer. As a matter of fact, if people go to our website, sfct.org/trails, and read through there and click on the appropriate links, they will be able to contact our trails coordinator, Susan Spinell, and write to her or call us and ask to be put onto the list and to go to our next training. It's fun.
We're talking to Reese Peterson and Becky Fuldrum from the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. So what else do you want people to know this Saturday, June 6th from, 9:30 to noon?
From 9:30 to noon at the north end of the Rail Yard Park. That's not the Rail Yard.
Near Site Santa Fe.
It's near, right next to Site Santa Fe. Sign up for our free raffles. As I said, we...
And all kinds of good stuff.
All kinds of good stuff. We have got giveaway maps. We've got maps... available for suggested donations.
And you can adopt a trail.
Oh, our Adopt a Trail program is such a great opportunity. Everybody knows the good work of the Santa Fe Watershed Association and their Adopt a Watershed signs that you see all up and down the Santa Fe River. Our Adopt a Trail program is exactly the same way, and we're launching it this summer. People will, businesses, individuals, neighborhoods, anyone can become a sponsor for certain donations that be happy to talk to them about if they want to contact me. And they will have a sign with their name placed at the trailhead. We have a number of trailheads around the city.
Or their dog's name.
Or their dog's name or whatever. And for that, they get a whole year's worth of sponsorship.
And do they have to go clean up the trail or anything?
They have that option. If they are an employer or a neighborhood or a family or whatever, Susan will work with them to go out and have a trails cleanup day at a time of their choosing, which is a great team-building thing for your employees.
So all of this is the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, Reese Peterson and Becky Fuldrum. The telephone, the website over there is SFCT, for Santa Fe Conservation Trust, .org. And what's the phone number?
989-7019.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It was great being with you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Good Morning Jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.